This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Lawmakers left town at week's end for Thanksgiving break, leaving Americans just thankful they were gone. Before they left, however, Harry Reid launched the nuclear option in the Senate, clearing the way for all of President Obama's radical nominees. In my opinion, Reid took the action to both protect Obamacare and divert attention away from Obamacare, the president's failed signature piece of legislation. Now, there'll be much more on this topic in the coming weeks. I encourage you to keep up with it by going to TonyPerkins.com and signing up for our alerts and my daily update. This past week, by the way, was the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, one of the most famous speeches made by a president in the history of our country. While President Obama left out the words "under God" in his rendition of this historic speech, I spoke with Dr. Daniel Dreisbach, who looked at the direct connection between the speech and the Bible. Also on this special weekend edition, speaking of the Bible, my good friend James Robison joined me on Wednesday to talk about the critical role of pastors in our culture today. And Congressman Bill Flores of Texas filled us in on a special effort by members of the House of Representatives to draw attention to the lawlessness of the IRS. All of that on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me again encourage you to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. More information about all of our speakers for this weekend, all of our guests. You can find out more about them and their topics by going to TonyPerkins.com. Well, courage stands in the face of evil and continues to proclaim truth, even when it's not going to help you in the popular vote category. Truth does not change, and we need to encourage our pastors to speak that truth in love, but speak the truth nonetheless, especially where America is today. Pastor James Robinson joined me on Wednesday to encourage pastors in this season in American history to proclaim that truth in love, but have courage to do what is right. Here's my interview with Pastor James Robinson. You and I have talked about this. You've done a lot in reaching out to pastors, younger pastors. You've been right there at the center of political activity back when President Reagan was president. So you've seen a lot in your time. And I would venture to say, would agree that sometimes the church leaders, maybe got too close to the political in terms of looking to the political as its source or its solution, rather than being a voice of truth, a prophetic voice of truth to that realm. But the pendulum's almost swung in the completely opposite direction, where now pastors want to avoid that realm altogether.
Well, the enemy is a master of, first of all, trying to keep us from doing right, and then when we do right, trying to get us to do right wrong. The move when Reagan came in was a supernatural move, in some ways a similar with, I would call, kingdom weight and influence to what happened to our founders when great diversity came together in supernatural unity for an ultimate meaningful purpose to the benefit of all and to securing and establishing freedom's foundation. The move of God to remove a leader who could not lead, who was the first to be talking about being born again, from the South, from the largest denomination of which I was, along with Billy Graham, evangelist in. He was removed from office, and a Hollywood actor was put in that actually had more conviction, stronger principles, and a better understanding and the capacity to lead than the president was there. And that response and that to the need of the hour would not have occurred in a positive and meaningful way had the faith community not stood up, come out of the closet, so to speak, got out from under covering, came out of hiding, got out of the pews, and became a light, piercing the darkness. And an incredible change occurred, very meaningful. Now, there were several things that happened after that. The typical political activists within both parties, I guess, in the, quote, more conservative areas too, like Republicans, they immediately began to keep faith influence away from the leaders. And then the faith community and the religious right, so to speak, or the concerned people, made the big mistake of appearing and actually, in many ways, becoming too attached to a particular party.
Mm-hmm.
It was as though the church was now suddenly to be considered an appendage of a party. And, by the way, it still appears to be so today. Actually, more of the, quote, socially concerned spiritual activists seem to be connected very directly to the other party, the one that doesn't even protect life and basic freedoms and marriage. But the point is, the church has never been assigned by God to be an arm of a party. The church is to be a voice, a standard bearer, piercing the darkness, illuminating the way, speaking the truth in love, hands-on compassionate involvement in action. And when I watched it happen, the right, religious right, becoming a part of a party, I moved out of the visible spotlight, never got out of the fray, but began to minister one-on-one to get Christians actively sharing their faith, winning people to Christ, meeting needs that were legitimate in effective ways, and found people wanting to do it. But the sad thing that you just referenced is that the church now reacting to what was not necessarily the wisest move on the part of some church leaders mm-hmm. to become too tightly connected with one particular party, people have now moved away from it. They have literally not only crawled under the covering of their own denominational positions and their posture and for some teachers' leadership, let's say, or just settled into comfort and compatibility, they have actually removed themselves from being the light that pierces the darkness and the salt that impacts the world in a profoundly positive manner, a manner leading us back to sound, unshakable principles. They have just, they've hidden the light. And as a result of it, culture is suffering. People are not seeing that the God we claim to believe in really matters in our own lives, in our families. We don't seem to have convictions that we're willing to stand for. And the thing people must realize today, that those committed to the realm of deception and darkness and big government, another form of Pharaoh upon which people are taught to depend and ultimately will be in bondage to, these people have allowed the enemy, the deceived crowd, that will never back down, they've allowed them to prevail. It's as though the gates of destruction are prevailing against the truth. And preachers, in my opinion, are responsible too often for the silence, for the lack of courage, for the lack of boldness. And if preachers would stand up and sound an alarm on the Holy Mountain, awaken the church, get them out of slumber and complacency, and hold up a reliable standard to all parties, all candidates, and all people, I believe the population would still swing back toward true north, biblical truth, the founders' doctrine, and the Constitution, and what it established. I really believe we could experience a miraculous awakening if preachers, Tony, would do what you've encouraged them to do, and to come together like a family and like a faith community to literally take on the realm of darkness and deception. I believe we could see a miraculous awakening.
Well, James, I agree with you. The problems facing our nation are not political at their core. They're spiritual. And what we must have, as you have described, are pastors who will preach the truth, not hitch their wagon to a political party, but be a prophetic voice of truth to all of those within the political realm.
You know, think about this a minute, Tony. Imagine this happening. The most listened to broadcast in America, talk radio. Interestingly, not those that espouse an ever-growing, ever-increasing, domineering, all-provident federal government. They are talk radio who are talking about sound economic principles, the basic ABCs. Can't spend more than you take in.
Mm-hmm.
They live in debt. Can't put an unbearable tax burden on people that haven't even been born. And the talk radio shows are defending freedom. They're defending faith. They're defending family. They're defending marriage. And they are defending life.
Mm.
What on earth has happened to pastors and church leaders who would sit back and see the population being more affected by a talk radio commentator who may not, in fact, even claim to be a Christian, but understands the value of the Christian faith, Judeo-Christian ethics and principles, understands the foundation upon which this nation was securely established. They are proclaiming it, and the church remains silent. It's almost as though we have been subdued or hypnotized into some kind of a trance of slumber that allows this to go on and the church not be aroused.
James, that's a great point. We're up against the break. Gotta go. We'll have you back on again. That was James Robinson, who now heads up Life Outreach International. Find out more about what he is doing. He still speaks to pastors, has a daily television program, and ministers literally around the world. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links there. All right, when we come back from the break on the weekend edition of Washington Watch, we're going to hear from Congressman Bill Flores of Texas about what some members of Congress did to draw attention to the lawlessness of the IRS. That's next, right here on the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
What if your most basic rights were being threatened? Sadly, this isn't a hypothetical question. Hostility against religion is on the rise. America's first liberty, the freedom of religion, is being pushed out of public life, out of our schools, and even out of our churches. Family Research Council has partnered with Liberty Institute to document these events. Our new report is titled Undeniable: The Survey of Hostility to Religion in America. While not exhaustive, it records almost 1,200 incidents of a hostility against religion. Historically, we have enjoyed great religious liberty in this country. We offer this report both as an undeniable warning and an encouragement to join us as we restore this liberty. We invite you to download and read the report by visiting religioushostility.org. That's religioushostility.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. This past Monday, a group of House members took to the floor of the House of Representatives to spotlight a special order regarding the IRS targeting Tea Party groups. As many of you know, and as we've covered extensively here in this program, this egregious effort by the IRS to single out Tea Party groups because of what they stand for is just over the top. Well, Congressman Bill Flores, who represents the 17th Congressional District of Texas, took the lead on this special order, and he joined me on Tuesday to talk about it. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk to listeners across the country, a lot of them in Texas, about what was the motivation behind you putting together this special order to draw attention to what the IRS has been doing.
Well, Tony, as with many of the scandals that have plagued the Obama administration, the oversight effort takes a fair amount of time, and they seem to go quiet after a while, and I think it's because the mainstream media loses interest in those things. And so what we wanted to do last night was to let the American people know that we have not forgotten about the IRS abuses of grassroots American organization, grassroots Americans, and to remind everybody of what's actually going on. I mean, we haven't stopped our oversight in Congress of this or Benghazi or Fast and Furious or some of the other offenses of the Obama administration, but with respect to the IRS matter, we just want to let the American people know that we still hear them, and they have a voice up here, and then we gave them that voice by reading their letters.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I think it's very important because I hear that across the country as I travel, is Congress going to forget about IRS? And I think it is one of the most politically explosive issues that, as you pointed out, there's many scandals, but I think it really comes to the front of the line next to Obamacare now as more and more people are losing their insurance. But let me ask you a question. This is several months old now, and there's been hearings. IRS has come before these committees. Have you seen willingness from the IRS to work with Congress to get to the bottom of this and correct the errors?
No, sir, not really. Most of the investigations that Congress is involved with right now could be a lot further down the road than they are today. But the administration is slow playing us on every request for information. In some cases, we have to issue subpoenas to get the information we've requested. In some cases, we have to hold folks in contempt, like Attorney General Holder. My suspicion is that this IRS matter will follow that same track, is that we will issue subpoenas and to compel the administration to produce information, and ultimately we may have to hold some folks in contempt of Congress in order to try to get to the bottom of this matter. And when I say get to the bottom, we want to know who knew what, who told the IRS to target these grassroots organizations so that we can hold those people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately where we're headed. And then, of course, the ultimate objective is to make sure it never happens again.
Absolutely. You mentioned Attorney General Holder and his contempt of Congress. Well, there was articles of impeachment filed against him introduced last week. And there's a connection between him and the IRS as well, which I think contributed to the congressional movement toward him, is that the National Organization of Marriage, for Marriage, who the IRS leaked their confidential tax records to political adversaries, the only one that can take action there is the Attorney General, the Department of Justice, and they've yet to do anything to hold the IRS accountable in that case.
That's correct, and the Attorney General is not fulfilling his oath of office, and I am one of the original co-sponsors of the Articles of Impeachment, along with Pete Olson and several other members of Congress, and we need an Attorney General that will fulfill their oath of office and do it in an impartial and fair manner, and follow the Constitution, and we don't have that with this Attorney General. But you know, it's just part of a larger pattern of abuse and cover-ups and scandals that come out of this administration. My guess is there will be more. We've seen the information that has come out recently about Obamacare and people that had their policies that liked them. The Obama administration knew years ago that millions of Americans were going to lose their policies, and so it's just, you know, the IRS is just one of many problems that come out of an administration that doesn't believe in the rule of law.
Yeah, it's just lawlessness. The only way I can describe what we're seeing and witnessing in this administration. What can voters or citizens across the country do to help? What would be most effective at this point in terms of a response here from Congress? Would it be voicing their support for these articles of impeachment? Is there other legislation that could hold the IRS accountable? What would be most effective at this point?
Well, my standard response when people ask how they can help is I say, pray for our country. And so I would ask everybody to start there, to pray for our country, to pray for its leaders. But then beyond that, I would suggest that everyday folks that are concerned about what's happening in Washington write to their members of Congress. And in particular, we need to write to the Democratic leadership. We need to be writing to Minority Leader Pelosi. They need to write to Majority Leader Harry Reid over on the Senate side, and to the Democratic senators that are not promoting the congressional oversight process that we have going on in the House. Those are the things. That's what I'd recommend. And then every now and then, it doesn't hurt for them to call their Republican congressman and say, attaboy or attagirl, you're doing a great job. Keep up the pressure. Those are the things I'd recommend, but I'd say it starts with prayer first.
I couldn't agree more. Congressman Flores, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for not allowing this issue to slip out of the spotlight and making sure that Americans know that you're here, you're doing something about it, and you haven't forgotten.
We haven't. We had five other great congressmen that were on with us, Louie Gohmert and Randy Weber from Texas, Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, James Lamb from Oklahoma, and Ron DeSantis from Florida. And I'm honored to be able to visit with you. I appreciate what you do on your show.
Well, that list you gave, those are all frequent guests here on the program. This is a stopping point for conservatives. So anytime you want to come back, Congressman, just let us know. We'd love to have you back on the program.
Yes, sir. We'll do that.
That was Congressman Bill Flores of Texas. To find out more about Congressman Flores, go to TonyPerkins.com. and follow the links over. When we come back, we'll be talking about the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. The president this week did his rendition, but left out the words "under God." Well, our next guest says there were a lot of connections between that original address and the Bible. You won't want to miss this interview with Dr. Daniel Dreisbach when we come back right here on Washington Watch.
Men and women are different. This used to be a self-evident, uncontroversial sort of statement, but today's elites, including the American Psychological Association, see the world quite differently. In 2011, the APA reported that, quote, "gender identity refers to a person's internal sense of being male, female, or something else," end quote. But this flexible and subjective view of gender has profound implications for the way law, society, and family all function. But what if men and women are created, equally valuable, but inherently different? And what if those differences matter for marriage, for kids, and for our communities? FRC has a new resource titled Complementarity in Marriage: What It Is and Why It Matters. This paper explains some of the scientific differences between men and women and the moral case for maintaining a natural view of marriage. To download this paper, visit frc.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Let me encourage you to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links to our various guests and the topics that they covered. You can also sign up for my daily update if you're not already getting that. That way, you'll stay up to date on issues happening in our nation's capital as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. Well, this past Tuesday was the 150th anniversary of President Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Those 10 sentences he spoke have gone down as one of the greatest speeches ever and continue to traverse across history. Dr. Daniel Dreisbach has spent hours breaking down this speech and has found some very specific connections with this speech and the King James Bible. Here's my interview with Dr. Dreisbach. Give us the history of what happened 150 years ago.
Well, 150 years ago, this past summer, of course, we had the Battle of Gettysburg. It was a decisive battle, a turning point in the war. It was a very costly battle, upwards of 50,000 casualties, 8,000 people lost their lives in that battle. And 4.5 months later, the President, Abraham Lincoln, traveled north to Gettysburg to dedicate a new national cemetery to the war dead. And on that occasion, he gave what you have rightly described as one of the most eloquent and moving speeches in American history.
Now, what have you found in the speech that Lincoln may have gotten from the Bible? That's one of the points you've made, that there is strong connections to the Bible and the speech.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. This is a speech that reverberates with the rhythms, the phrases, the themes of the Bible, and especially the King James Bible. We're all familiar, of course, with that opening line when Lincoln says, 67 years ago. This is language that resembles the psalmist's calculation for a man's 70 years of life on earth. That's in Psalm chapter 90, verse 10. Now, Lincoln could have said 87 years ago. It doesn't quite have that same majesty to it, but I think he very deliberately chose language that would call to mind the scripture, call to mind the Psalms, and it puts his audience in a biblical frame of mind. But he goes immediately from 67 years ago to "our fathers." This is the language, of course, of the Lord's Prayer. This is also the language of the Old Testament. It's a reference to the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then he goes immediately into the next phrase, "brought forth." Our fathers brought forth on this continent, Brought forth is a phrase that appears over and over again in Scripture. It's the language of the creation story in Genesis chapter 1. It is the language used to describe Moses' deliverance of the children of Israel from slavery in Egypt. It's the language of Matthew chapter 1 that describes Mary's deliverance of the Christ child. So from the very opening lines, and this continues to the very last clause of this speech, he's drawing on very familiar biblical language.
Now, is this because it was a common language? People understood things in that context of that language, the King James language, but also that he was trying to reassure them with eternal truths and without specifically quoting chapter and verse, putting them in that mindset?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Effective communicators know how to connect with an audience, and they also know how to choose the kinds of words that will communicate authority, will communicate solemnity, will communicate sort of the moral gravity of what it is that one wants to communicate. And so I think Lincoln is very deliberately drawing on a language that's very familiar to his audience for this rhetorical effect. But I think it's more than that, Tony. I think he uses not only biblical language, but he plays on a biblical theme. In fact, it may be the most important biblical theme of all, and that's the gospel message. We all know that the central message of the gospels is the conception, the birth, death, and new life that we have in Christ. And Lincoln's playing off that analogy. He says, we were born 67 years ago on July 4th, 1776. But that was a birth born in corruption, the corruption of slavery. But there on that battlefield at Gettysburg, he said, these brave men sacrificed their life so that we as a nation can have a new birth in the hope of eternal life as a nation, so to speak. And it's going to be a new life that's stripped of that besetting sin of slavery, because after all, that's what Lincoln thinks this war is all about. So he's drawing on biblical language for these very important rhetorical reasons, but he's also playing off a very powerful biblical theme here.
No wonder the speech has stayed the test of time. Again, that was Daniel Dreisbach. You can find out more about Dr. Dreisbach by going to the website tonyperkins.com. Thanks so much for being with us for this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me, on behalf of all of us here at Washington Watch and the Family Research Council, wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. May you enjoy the time with family and friends. And let me leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. He instructed us over in Ephesians chapter 6, when we've done all we can do, when we've prayed, we've prepared, and we've taken our stand, let's just keep standing.
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.